Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
And good evening, everybody. It is almost Thanksgiving here in 2015. Today is November 24th, Tuesday night, Circle Radio Night on Pegasus tonight. And this is David Ewing here, and I'm joined by Jeanette. Hello, Jeanette.
Hello.
Hello.
Also, a full moon this evening, or is it technically tomorrow night?
I think it's tomorrow.
Is it?
It's pretty big and bright out there tonight. But I think
it's very big and bright out
tonight.
Sort of weird to think that the year is almost over.
Yeah.
Where did it go? You know what? We say this every year. Where did the year go? Where did the year go?
Wasn't it just like March yesterday?
I know.
Or last week? We had plans for the summer, and we're going to do things and everything, and it's already November. And holy cow. Thanksgiving already.
I know. Definitely.
And I know people have already started their holiday shopping and
that
fun stuff.
There are a few people who already have their Christmas tree up, but I'm still in fall mode. I don't really start thinking about Christmas or Yuletide until into December, which is fine by me. Maybe the second weekend of December is when I start to really start getting into the Yuletide mood. So we're still talking about this part of the dark time over here and how really starting earlier than Samhain, really it kind of start a little bit in September, during fall equinox. During Mabin, the autumn equinox time, where once you are after those particular days, the days do start getting noticeably shorter, the nights a little bit longer, and in some pagan cultures, even that time in September, later September moving into October, it becomes a time when people start thinking about the mortality, the dark time of the year, and that more introspective time of the year, and for many people, that includes ancestors, thinking about people who passed beyond the veil maybe more immediately, in the past few years, like your more immediate family members, brothers, sisters, spouses, children, grandparents, beloved pets, and then which often happens at this time, we also start thinking about ancestors more broadly. Those people that came before us, maybe the people that were the first members of the extended family or clan that moved to the United States, or the particular part of the country that you lived in, or what have you, or the first wave of immigrants in your family line that came across the ocean or came up from South America or Asia or wherever else to settle here in the United States. So it becomes, and it can become an extended period of time, not just one night out of a year to honor and work with and think about and meditate on their ancestors and what they have to teach us.
Right. We listen to Selena talk about this fairly often, and she talks about it, the seasons. She talks about, Samhain season and Thanksgiving season and stuff, because a lot of these things can be done over the course of time. It's not just a one-night thing. It's over time and, and giving thanks this Thanksgiving time. For me, I see it as we start it, in the general modern pagan culture, broadly speaking, Thanksgiving times start with Ludusod in the beginning of August, with the first as the first harvest, where we start bringing in the harvest and we start giving thanks of the harvest kind of stuff. And it's appropriate, you know, to start giving thanks and thinking about the ancestors and notable things that have in that respect, and to keep that going, because that's part of the whole giving thanks thing. you know, it's stuff that we can do, not just even through a certain season even. It's, you know, you can do things year-round to honor and give thanks and incorporate the ancestors in different forms of Thanksgiving that you do. There's various traditions and things that people do for that.
Right. So it does become a more common practice for many pagans here in the United States as part of something they do around maybe starting at Maiden, you know, fall equinox, moving into Samhain and maybe a little bit after. But it is worth noting that it is something that you can do every day in some small way. Although, energetically, we know, you know, Earth is starting to go to her hibernation mode. So it's not surprising that as the Earth is going to sleep and the, you know, the branches of the trees are there and it's colder, that we start thinking about mortality. And so it becomes a natural segue to start thinking about those who passed on. But there are a lot of different things that people can do to work on that. And this is a good time of the year to work on that. So it might not seem too terribly appropriate to do things maybe at Yuletide with the whole gift-giving thing and celebrating the return of the light to the world after the winter solstice and that sort of thing. But the segue time in between Samhain and Yule, I think, is a really good time to work on and doing some significant kinds of things to work with and get inspiration from or learning or wisdom from your ancestors. So one thing that we did this year is we had this event called Howard Homecoming. Howard Homecoming, a Samhain retreat. And the focus of that weekend was to work with the ancestors and to learn about different ways of connecting with the ancestors. Do you want to expound on that a little bit, David?
I could talk a little bit about it, I suppose. So the weekend was really, I mean, it was a weekend that we did. It was a Samhain weekend, and we called it a retreat because it was at a campground in Prince William Forest Park in Northern Virginia, which is right near Quantico Marine Corps Base. In fact, while we were there on Friday getting set up and the arrivals were coming in and everybody's arriving, most everybody was arriving on Friday, you could hear in the background, off in the distance, you could hear the Marines training. They were shooting things as part of the training, so if you could hear that going on. And many people commented on, you know, is there fireworks going on? Is there fireworks? No, it's just the Marines. They're training. They're shooting stuff. It's fine. They're a little ways away. There's stuff between us, but they're shooting stuff over there, you know, in the woods over yonder, which kind of set the tone. Like, okay, so that kind of sets the tone for that campground. That's one of the things I like about the campground is that tone is that you're in the woods and you can kind of disconnect and be remote from everything in the world, but you've got this element of you know, people training for the defense of things, and it's sort of in a way, I think, I mean, some people might be a little anxious about it, but I think others find there's comfort in knowing that, okay, well, there's stuff going on nearby where this training is happening, and you know, people who have worked and associated and been connected with the military might see it in a more positive light than some others. That's why many of us like to go back to that camp. One of the reasons why we think that campground is really cool. But anyway, Prince William Forest Park in Northern Virginia. It's a national park, and they have these rustic cabins that we all slept in. They're part of the historical register, on the National Registry of Historical Buildings, I think it is. So they're older, rustic, meaning, you know, they're not airtight. They're not weather tight. They're mostly weather tight, but if it's cold outside, it's cold in the cabin. And you can get a little breeze. But that's kind of the, I think that's also set sort of a tone for what we're doing there as a retreat, is that, you know, we're all kind of going through a little bit of hardship together with a cold night. And it was cold Saturday night.
It was rather chilly.
It was.
Saturday
it was.
Night.
It was rather. It was. Yeah, it got down around 40, and it was a little humid. So sort of a damp chill kind of thing that we had on Saturday night there. So we had workshops during the weekend. We had some workshops about ancestor work and how different cultures connected with the ancestors and the dead. And we had pumpkin carving on Friday as sort of a more of a fun activity. We had a party Friday night that seemed to go fairly well. I think we can, for our first time, it didn't do too bad. People seemed to have a good time. Costumes.
Yeah, I think so.
And there
yes,
were some costumes, and there
nice.
Were some rather entertaining costumes. Nothing inappropriate, but there were certainly some active puns walking through the room.
Yes, there was.
I just think of the person who had the chicken cordon bleu.
Yes.
Blue shirt with a rubber chicken. And wrapped her up with a phone cord. So the rubber chicken was attached to her, wrapped up a phone cord. It was chicken, phone cord on a blue shirt, chicken cord on blue. It took folks a minute to see it, and then there was always the inevitable groan. So we had fun Friday night. And then Saturday was connecting with the ancestors, and they had some workshops, and the weather was really good for it. It was a little cloudy, a little drizzly early in the day. Kind of subdued weather-wise. And then you want to talk about the ritual we had?
Yeah, so before that, what kind of workshop, well, what are the names or the types of workshops that we had? Selena was our Fox Circle Sanctuary, was our special guest that weekend, and she led a couple of different workshops on working with the ancestors. So what were those?
Journeying to Ancestral Places was one of them, where she talked about how to connect with where your ancestors came from, which was really kind of significant for her because she's from the Northern Virginia area, and her family, she has family history here in the Northern Virginia area too. So that's kind of a significant thing for her, is journeying to ancestral places, exploring ways to connect with the spirits of your ancestors, how to identify ancestral omens and guidance, do ancestral rituals at cemeteries, pilgrimage to ancestral lands. And a pilgrimage to an ancestral land might be, you know, going to a town where one of your ancestors lived. Like, we're here in Virginia, so we could go down to Charlottesville and do some research on some of my ancestors, and that is a pilgrimage to ancestral land. So you don't have to leave the country to do a pilgrimage. You could just go down the road. And working with ancestral portals on altars and shrines. And then she did one on honoring the dead, creating rituals, meditations, chants, and other ways of remembering the beloved dead. And that was sort of a discussion, too, because that was on Sunday. That was the one that was on Sunday. So part of that discussion turned into processing of the ritual from the night before. People had a chance to talk about their experiences and their impressions of the ritual we had the night before. So
right.
It seemed to be fairly productive.
Yeah.
For
so
her. Yeah.
I thought that would be a good segue to talk about types of ritual work or meditative work that people do and people can do to connect with their ancestors. So there's work with connecting with the ancestors, and that might be seen as different from connecting with a beloved dead, specifically those people who have passed maybe more recently. So that might be a good way to describe the differences between the two. And so in the main ritual, what we did is we had people process from a particular area within the campground through on a wooded trail, you know, with, you know, heavily forested, because the whole park where we were at is fairly heavily wooded. And so we would do
that. And it's how do they refer to it? New generation forest or something? Because a lot of the campground used to be farmland at one time. It's been cleared at times in the past. So the trees there, it's not old growth. It's fairly new growth. But it's really well forested, pretty dense.
Right.
Yeah. So, so folks processed in. We had a gathering area that we had gathered up in, and we kind of talked about what we were going to be doing and set the mood. We had some mugwort tea, mugwort and mint tea, to help people kind of open their psychic awareness and their spiritual awareness and stuff. That's what mugwort's good for. And people processed in. We had our ritual space. We had a casting of the circle, which is really well done. Calling the quarters, the deities, your general generic pagan format. And what was really significant was the part that Selena did.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Because she has this way of, she opens the portal and talks everybody through the process of connecting and remembering their ancestors and their beloved dead. And talk about the ancestors of your departed loved ones, immediate family members, friends, pets, and there's cultural ancestors, which are like may not be related or ancestor of blood or family, but of your culture. and cultural ancestors, your immediate ancestors, and who else? What was the other one?
And then you have the ancestors of your clan or your where you're from, your family clan. You think of things like,
mm-hmm.
you know, your Scottish culture or Irish culture or, you know, something along those lines. So there's immediate family, there's your clan, and then there's the culture. And so the culture can be really important for those of us who have had important teachers that have impacted us, not just pagan teachers, but it can be that grade school teacher that you had when you were a little kid that really helped develop your creative side or pushed you into becoming the person you are today as an engineer or a scientist or, you know, whatever. So it's those types of people, mentors that you've had throughout your life. Again, it can be pagan or not pagan. It can be a highly personalized sort of thing. But it can also be pagan teachers. It can be people that you've met and worked with or maybe people that you haven't. Like maybe Scott Cunningham or Margot Adler or Isaac Bonowitz.
Mm-hmm.
So those are involved in the ancestors of your culture as well. So those can be three different things. And so, and I believe Selena may still have this information. Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve still may have this information on the circle.org website. I'm not 100% sure because I haven't looked recently. But there is a personal meditative working that you can do to honor, to connect with, and gain wisdom from these three different types of ancestral beliefs. This is one example of something that one can do. Now,
mm-hmm.
during the main ritual that we had at Howl's Homecoming this year, her main role was to introduce this concept of the three types of ancestors and to open the ancestral portal. And what Selena does, and she's done this pretty much every year we've also attended Samhain at Circle Sanctuary, is that she has a very specific role to, A, open the portal, which is one way that it can be done to connect with ancestors. And then during this process of healing, and it's a specific thing that she does, I've not seen anybody else do this, where it becomes a specific way of outwardly processing grief for those who have passed more recently. So you may not have grief over some cultural ancestor that died 300 years ago, but one's grief is certainly more palpable and more immediate and needs to have a different kind of expression, let's say, for your pet that you lost this year, or your brother or sister or grandparent or parent that you lost fairly recently, or maybe even not so recently, that you never really processed the way that you needed to process. And so that's where this concept of healing comes into play, and it's an ancient, it's an old Scottish practice where you will kind of moan and wail, and you outwardly process your grief by moaning, and it becomes a very useful tool to help process your grief, because then it's okay for you to be as loud and cry as long as you need to, as a physical mechanism of relief.
Right, and that really, and when she gets into that part of the ritual, we turn off the lights so that people can connect with that and process that in private. You know, we're in a room full of 90-some-odd people, but when the lights are out and we had blackened out the windows, we covered the windows with black paper and had hung curtains and stuff to block out the light. So when we turned the lights out in the room, in the space that we were in, it was dark. It was dark. And
and the only thing that was going was a fireplace.
We had a fire in the fireplace. We had in our hearth, in the feast hall that we were in. There's a fireplace, and that was the ritual fire that was burning all through the weekend. And so there was that. So otherwise, it was pretty dark in there. So it gave people that freedom to be able to grieve and to wail on their own and to cry. And it was anonymous. You know, you were in there with others, so if you were really, you know, having a fairly intense grieving moment, there was somebody next to you to hold your hand, or, you know, put their hand on your shoulder or whatever. There was that, you had the contact was available from somebody next to you, but it was dark, you couldn't see, so it was kind of anonymous that way too. So people could do that and feel free to do that without being seen, being judged, or whatever, being embarrassed, or, you know, that kind of stuff, which I think is very, very, very powerful, the whole keening thing that she does,
it is. Now, if that sort of thing isn't your particular style, or you wouldn't want to go that particular realm, or if you've made peace with family that has passed, and you want to do some other type of in-depth working, it runs along the line of a type of extended journey work, which has been classified as, is that type of three-part journey that I previously mentioned before David talked about this ritual that you can do as a solitary ritual. And the bonus of doing that way is that you can spend as much time as you want with one of these three. You only want to focus on, let's say for this particular time period, you want to try to focus on getting some wisdom from ancestors of your clan, ancestors of your family. Let's say some ancient Scottish ancestor or some ancient ancestor that you've heard about, your great-great-great Uncle Angus McGillicuddy from 300 years ago. So let's say you want to do that. Having a personal solitary ritual where you are taking as much time as you need to get into that journey space and connect with whoever you want to try to connect it with, or maybe just be non-specific. Being non-specific can be really helpful because then there's no expectation of, well, this didn't work for me. Something must have happened that, you know, this specific person didn't show up for me. But the advantage of it being a little more open-ended in your journey work would be, you know, my goal is to, or, you know, I wish to connect with my ancestors from my father's side of the family, something really general. Then it becomes more open-ended, and so whoever shows up for you is whoever shows up for you. And maybe that's the point, is that, you know, whoever you're meant to connect with on that night for whatever specific learning is that person that you're supposed to connect with. So there's the advantage of that as well. So doing specific type of journey work or being in a facilitated ritual is just one way of connecting with ancestors. And you had some other things that you were talking about before we started the show about ways other cultures connect with ancestors.
Oh, yeah, other cultures. So there's a variety of different ways to connect with ancestors. There's one, let me see here. I'm commenting back to somebody who asked a question in the chat. So one, yeah, there's a variety of ideas and options here. So I just did a quick search, you know, and did some quick searching around a while back about, you know, different ways to give thanks to your ancestors. And there's a lot of different, I mean, most cultures have something that they do to recognize and honor and give thanks to their ancestors. And it goes back, there's ancestors, evidence of ancestor veneration going back to the Zhou dynasty in China, back around 1100 BC. So, you know, there's evidence of that, and, you know, stuff from back then. So honoring ancestors is something that humans have been doing for eons. I think we've gotten past centuries at that point. And especially within Confucianism and Taoism, they do things to honor the ancestors. The like in some cases, one of the beliefs is that the deities included in nature spirits, ancient legendary heroes, humanized planets and stars, humans who became immortal through various practices, and other animals. And so, but there's a lot of stress, a lot of importance placed on paying respect to elders and deceased ancestors to, because they're still around, you know, they'll still have influence on what's going on. And that's kind of a key thing, I think, with most people, is that with a lot of these, the common points with a lot of these is that the ancestors, those who've passed, their energies, their influence, their spirits, their connections to us are still around, which ties real quick to something I read recently on the internet, because so it must be true. But I read something that, see, yeah, I thought I'd throw that out there, seemed to indicate that the idea of memories being passed person to person through DNA might actually be possible. You know, there was some sort of theory. There's a theory that there's base memories that are this passed through DNA. And if you think about that, just think about the implication of that, of what that holds, is that, you know, the memories of something, experiences, or something that happened to your ancestors is something you could be carrying with you, some sort of genetic memory or some connection, that connection of, you know, we're all made of our ancestors, you know, and the idea that we all carry it in our blood and that kind of stuff or some other beliefs. But just think about that moment, you know, just that. So ancient societies, ancient peoples were kind of keying on that long, long, long ago before they even knew it, you know, before DNA was ever identified.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's really sort of, and now science is starting to key in on, like, well, you know, there's a possibility that memories could be passed down through DNA. I'm like, well, then you actually are. You know, the idea of past life regression, maybe it's not a past life regression. Maybe when you do past life regression, you're pulling up these memories from your ancestors.
Could be.
And it's not what you, what your soul did in a previous life. It could be what happened to your ancestors.
To Angus McGillicuddy.
To Aunt Angus McGillicuddy.
Or
Uncle Angus McGillicuddy.
Like in your case, Hans Lauper, who got kicked out of the state.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe that's part of the trauma that I have with the whole idea of thinking, the thought of going up to the northern Midwest.
Did you get kicked out of Wisconsin or something?
Oh, it was Wisconsin, Minnesota, or something like that. There was religious differences. They weren't religious enough for him. They didn't go far enough. Some ideas of ways to honor your ancestors.
Now, one way that most people have heard about is...
Day of the Dead.
The whole Day of the Dead thing. Now, there are people who are focusing more on the party aspect than what the purpose of the sugar skulls and that stylized type of makeup of the skulls is to demonstrate that your... the dead are the beloved dead, and there's a whole stylized look with that and what it represents and things like that. But one of the things that is prevalent in that culture is that the dead aren't something to be feared. The dead are your family, and when you cross over, they're going to be there to greet you, and at the specific time of the year, they'll come back and visit you, and you can have time to connect with it. So there is this concept of surprisingly at this time of the year, because for most of us, we can believe that the veil is very thin between the living and the dead, and so it makes sense. The natural way of connecting with the divine, with the dead at this time is because the veil is thin, and so it's not too surprising in other cultures as well. So you visit the grave, you have a picnic there, you put great big flowers at home, you have lots of marigolds, which is very symbolic within Aztec and Mayan culture as a way of leading the dead from the grave back to your home so they can find their way home to you, and so you have a big feast in your honor. So that's, most people know about that. They don't know, you know, too much in the specific. Some people know a little bit more than others in varying degrees, but that is a very common practice. So, and there are other cultures that do similar kinds of things, that venerating their dead, but in different ways.
Right. Let's see. Well, there's a day in China, the Qingming Festival, which is basically it's Ancestors Day or the Tomb Sweeping Day. So you honor your dead and give thanks to your dead by going to where they're interred, and you clean their tombs and their, you know, you clean things up and you leave offerings like food, tea, and other things like that. And this practice goes back to around 732 AD. when it was declared by an emperor that there were too many extravagant celebrations of ancestors and that such celebrations should be reserved for this one day. And it's also used to pay respects to the people who have died during significant events in China's history, such as Tiananmen Square. There's, let's see, what's another one? Lemuralia, which is ancient Roman. I was reading about this one, too. Kind of read up on this one. This is kind of different. It was in ancient Rome to banish malevolent spirits of one's ancestors from one's house. So if you've got an ancestor who's holding a grudge of some sort, or maybe you wronged them in some way and you think that their spirit's kind of sticking around and bugging you and making your life difficult, you can encourage them.
Oh, what, if you think of
them
like crap and...
Yeah,
they were alive.
or maybe you were, or maybe you contributed to their death or something. You know, something. Oh my gosh, yeah. So what you do is you cleanse the house. The head of the household wakes up, supposed to get up at midnight, wash their hands three times. Then while walking barefoot throughout the house, throw black beans over their shoulder nine times while chanting something, which translates to, "I send these with these beans. I redeem me and mine." So. You know, the beans are an offering to the spirit as a redemption, I'm asking for redemption and that kind of thing. This is said to have been started by the Romulus to appease the spirit of his twin brother Remus that he had killed for jumping over a wall. So that's why I say, like, you know, redemption from an ancestor that you've wronged. Some of them could be if you actually killed the ancestor or something, or involved with their death, you might really want to seek redemption. That could be a good incentive. There's a couple.
There's also another practice, and I believe it is, I want to say Vietnam, where when an elderly, and it may not be just elderly, but I've seen this with the elderly. So when Granny dies, Granny is buried under the house. Oh, and that's another thing. There are many cultures that the beloved dead doesn't get buried at a cemetery. The beloved dead get buried under the house, and so they dig them out, and then after a certain period of time when the body is like desiccated, dried, and they dress them up, and there's like a place of honor in the house for that person. So honor Granny. And, you know, Granny's life or whatever. But Granny's in the house with them after a certain period of time. It's an X number of days or months afterwards. That has always stuck in my head. I saw it on a TV show quite a few years back.
I have some workshop notes on that because I did a workshop on that kind of stuff last year. And in Madagascar... And here's another one. What they do is in Madagascar, they don't have like a special day, but every winter there's a procession. There's a thing that happens when tombs are opened, corpses are removed to be wrapped in silk and carried around the tomb to live music. The tradition says the belief is that the spirit of the dead cannot fully go to the land of the ancestors until the body is completely decomposed. As such, every 7 years, the body is removed, rewrapped, and put back into the tomb with a proper party. The celebration brings together extended families and is a chance for an entire family to pay respects to the dead. So they actually open the grave, open the tomb, remove the body, rewrap the body, walk it around, have some music, and kind of there's some festivity to it. Let me find some of the workshop I talked about, too. There were some other practices that were sort of unusual for dealing with the with those who have passed.
Yeah, somehow I just don't think that that would be looked too kindly upon here in the United States.
No. Not quite. Yeah, that might be a little, that might weird some people out, you know, and this
so
is a country
that
people
the ancestors,
easy.
You waste honor the ancestors as the situation and laws allow. So that,
right, right. yeah, because, you know, re-digging up grandma to open the grave, yeah, people tend to frown on that. The cemetery caretakers, for one, to start with. Oh, yeah, mummification stuff. So there's, I had some notes on different mummification processes and stuff. There was...
Well, there's, of course, the one that most everyone knows about in ancient Egypt.
From Peru.
But there are others,
and
too, right?
Other ones, and, yeah. Yeah. And so talk about mummification, which kind of dovetails out of this topic a little bit. like the cloud people in the Andes, because they were found among the cloud-covered forests in the Peruvian Andes. Where they, there's a lot of practices where they take the bodies apart and remove components and then put them back together again with like sticks and things to hold them together and cover them in certain things like red ochre or white ash paste and various things, clay and stuff. But there's reasons for what they did. It was kind of strange practices that people had with how they deal with those who have passed away. Yeah.
So as we move back to modern practices and the 21st century, what are some things that we can do? Well, one of them is the specific time of Samhain to do things. Another thing is to have an ancestor altar up all year round. You don't have to have it up only at this time of the year. You can actually have something up all year round. And it can become part of an integrated practice with your regular practice so that maybe seasonally you change out flowers or, you know, every few weeks you have you put fresh flowers on your vase. You might have some things that your ancestors, especially if it's an immediate ancestor, like someone you actually knew, like your parent or grandparent or great uncle or what have you, that you knew that they liked this particular kind of food. So maybe you'll have chili pepper sitting out there for a little while, and, you know, they'll get dry and maybe put, you know, new things out. Or maybe it'll be a little piece of tartan of that family. Or maybe it'll be something that maybe represents a place in part of the United States where some of your ancestors lived. You know, something that represents that. Or maybe it's a little teacup that was your grandma's or something. So you can have little mementos and a little trinket. Maybe it's a piece of jewelry that they had. If you had Catholic ancestors, Catholic family members that have passed on, and you happen to get the rosary, having a rosary is a really good way of honoring that ancestor and keeping their spirit alive, especially if it was something that they handled and used a lot. So part of their energy is still, I think, is still in that piece of whatever, you know, that teacup that they used, that piece of jewelry, the rosary or whatever, and it could stay on the altar. So it can have a place of prominence, and so it becomes an easier way for you to actually get in touch with them. So it can be at certain times of the year, or maybe it can be a time where maybe you're going to try to contact them because you have something specific you want to connect with them for a specific reason. So that can be incorporated into what you're doing as well.
Right, and like one of the things that we do, well, we don't really have it out all the time, which we probably could, is that spoon that I have from my great-great-great-grandfather. It's got his and his wife's initials on, you know, engraved on the spoon. It's a serving spoon, silver serving spoon that we use for our ancestor altar when we set up an ancestor altar at Samhain time. And you see some people may not realize. So you think about, if you really kind of expand your view and what you see and think about, you know, what you see and what it is, outside the box kind of thing, you go to people's houses and they'll have, you know, a collection of photographs of all their, you know, people who've passed away, all their family and stuff. And that is, you know, basically an ancestor altar. You know, but it may not be considered as such when they put it up, but you know, it's like, well, just all the pictures of everybody else, this is grandma and aunt so and so, and these other folks that, you know, they passed away. It's like, well, you've got sort of an ancestor altar, you've got a family altar that honors your ancestors and those who are living, so it's kind of combined like that. You know, that's something that, I mean, you can set up in your house, and nobody's really going to think that you're, you know, you can have the friends and family and neighbors come over, and it's just sort of normal looking, you know, that stealthy altar.
That is,
yeah,
true.
There are certainly, you know, yeah,
and
you know,
people do that without even thinking about it, you know,
yeah.
in you know, or they'll have it on, you know, the mantel place, or you know, on the piano or something. There'll be some place in the house that has a place of prominence that has all these different pictures of people who have passed on. It might be just pictures of them, combination of living and passed on in that particular photograph. And so it's a great way to actually keep that memory alive because you have that daily reminder of them. So it can be something more elaborate or it can be something simplistic. So you can have something that honors somebody and something more elaborate, like the Samhain ritual, or have a simple mantra that you say once a day, or, you know, a candle that you light every morning or maybe every night before you go to bed, you know, something simple that you'll say as a way of keeping that connection alive within you. So it can be, in a, you know, a number of a different, you know, manifested in a lot of different ways.
Right. yeah, a lot of different ways. So, I mean, there are certainly cultures that have, where it's normal to have an altar set up for your ancestors in the home. That's expected. I think of, you know, the Mexican culture, Japanese, in Japan, they'll have it set up for their ancestors, and other cultures too, where it's a very normal kind of a thing, specifically to have a specific ancestor altar. Right. So, gosh, it's already 5 till. Let's see, some other ideas. So Circle Sanctuary actually has some pretty good information about in the Celebrating Samhain section of the Circle website under Celebrating the Seasons. She's got a lot of information about honoring ancestors and things to do with that during the time. So this is still sort of that Samhain season, honoring ancestors time frame, Thanksgiving. So Selena has a lot of stuff on the Circle website about honoring ancestors. And that's a big thing for her anyway. If you really pay attention and follow what she does and what she says and her practice, there's a lot of ancestor work involved with her tradition.
Yes, that's true, with the Circle Craft tradition. And so,
yeah,
so there's stuff on that page, and Also, Circle Sanctuary also has a cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And they routinely will go up there to the cemetery for people who are already buried there to put fresh flowers out and other things like that. And as we move into Thanksgiving, one thing that one can do is have a play setting for the people who have passed on.
Yep. Yeah, when you set your Thanksgiving table. Yeah, when you set your Thanksgiving, you know, meal and stuff, set up a play setting for to honor those who have passed and put the food on it, fill it up with food so they can partake of the spirit of the food. And then what we usually do after that is we'll people are like, well, what do you do with the food afterwards? Well, if you set it out for the ancestors, they're going to partake of the spirit of the food. So it would not be appropriate to eat the food afterwards. So, you know, a lot of times what we'll do is we'll put it out for the animals. So be mindful of what you're putting on the plate for the ancestors, but, you know, put it out for nature and nature will take care of it.
That is true. That is true. And that a variation of that is something called the Dumb Supper, which is its own thing that can be, you know, a specific type of silent dinner ritual that one can do, or you just incorporate that aspect into what you are doing for Thanksgiving.
Right. You could do the actual Dumb Supper, and there's plenty of information online. You can look it up and track down what that's all about. When we did our Samhain gathering, our Hallowed Homecoming, for our Saturday dinner, was a formal dinner, and there was a table set up for the ancestors, and that stayed there during the ritual as well as part of the ancestor table for the ritual. The place setting itself was there for the ritual too. So we, you know, set things up for them. So let's see what else we have going on.
Well, I think our hour is just about up.
I think so. So what's next week? We got Debs on next week. And who is she talking to? Do you recall?
I do not recall.
Let's see here. Next Tuesday, she's going to be hosting Circle Talk on December 1st. On Druid Solstice, her guest will be one of the Circle Sanctuary ministers in training, Erica Rivertree. So Erica will be joining Deb Rose as they talk about Druid Solstice. So kind of, you know, we're talking about Thanksgiving tonight, and the next month, focuses on Yule and the solstice through the next few Circle Talks and Selena's programs, too, on Nature Magic. So, yeah, December 1st, Druid Solstice with Erica Rivertree, one of the Circle Sanctuary ministers in training. So hang out. Stay tuned for that. Selena's program will be next Tuesday at the same time, 8 o'clock Eastern, 8-7-6-5 for Eastern Central Mountain Pacific. I'm looking for a song for us to close out with. So do you have any final thoughts?
I think we are good. And like I said, start simple. Have maybe a couple of pictures sitting out. Maybe have a single candle that you'll light once a day. And as the spirit moves you, perhaps move into more in-depth work to connect with your ancestors throughout the year.
So we'd like to thank Circle Sanctuary for support and all the support that we've received in our connection with Circle and Selena Fox. I'd like to thank everybody who's listened in tonight live, and I saw that some folks had some issues being able to stay with us throughout the evening listening through their computers, and the internet tends to be a little flaky sometimes. So how about we close out tonight with the song by Spiral Rhythm, their One Spirit.
All righty. I think that sounds good.
All righty. That's what we'll do. And good night, everybody.
One spirit in the dark, like a candle wavers. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, the circle empowering you and me. The circle binds, yet sets us free. In the goddess name, so mote it be. One spirit in the dark, like a candle wavers. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, a circle empowering you and me. A circle binds, yet sets us free. In the goddess name, so mote it be. One spirit in the dark, like a candle
joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.